answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA. I woke up this morning, got myself a gun. Mama always
said I'd be the chosen one. Abolish the Senate.
True.
Okay, replace the presidency and Supreme Court as we now know them.
Yep.
Abolish ICE.
Absolutely.
Abolish borders and give amnesty to anyone currently in the U.S. illegally.
As a long-term plan, yep.
Defund the Pentagon.
Absolutely.
Abolish prisons, at least in large part.
Yeah, again, that as part of a long-term program, yeah.
Okay, so no prisons. Government or public ownership of most large corporations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are those positions the Democratic Party should accept, in your view?
No, and I think the vast majority of Democrats do not. But, of course, we're a big tent party where people have different viewpoints. I think that the mainstream viewpoints are ones of, you know, making sure that everyone has a chance to get on the up escalator of the economy. And secondly, that everyone has a chance, regardless of who you are, where you come from, or the number of letters in your name. There are 29 in mine. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are kind of the big tent kind of priorities of the Democratic Party.
Those were questions posed to the deputy chief of the DSA, the Democrat Socialist of America. And then an Illinois congressman, Krishnamurti of the Chicago district, basically covering, I think it's the 11th or 12th district. I lost my note here. But he was asked, is that the view of your party? Well, no, but I mean, we're a big tent. We're a big tent. You don't want to invite killers and arsonists inside your party, do you? Well, apparently they do. Anything they can do to win the election. And they don't just have their nose under the tent. They are in the middle of the tent. I've pointed this out before. And it's causing issues within the Democrat Party on their fundraising and what they're going to be able to do in the election coming up in the midterm, much less the general election. I want to get into that in more detail later. But one thing I want to point out now, this mass migration, willing to accept illegals, no borders, just bring them in. Are you aware of what happened in Morocco, a Spanish enclave, the Ceuta in the Moroccan region? 50,000 migrants fled across the border invading. Basically, that's what it was. President Trump said that looked like a catastrophe as 50,000 migrants flooded Spain's enclave of Ceuta from Morocco. He said that will happen here if Democrats continue to have their way. They will reopen our borders. We'll go through this all over again, and it'll get worse. And European leaders are calling for Spain to be cut out of any open border zone because of that Moroccan invasion. And these were not families. These were young men, military age men, suddenly rushing across. And then you got many of them on a ferry boat trying to make their way to the Spanish enclave. And it starts sinking. An untold number died in that crossing. This is what happens. I told you repeatedly, watch what happens in Europe. And in this case, watch what happens in Morocco. Welcome to hour number two, Larry Connors USA. Here we are, always with news, analysis, commentary, and education. You leave each hour with more information than you have right now. And one part of your education, if you do not have the Newstalk STL app on your phone, let me encourage you to download it. Go to the App Store on your phone, search Newstalk STL, put it on your phone, absolutely free of charge. We do not track you. We do not share any information of you to anyone, not even our sponsors, nobody. But this way you have it on your phone and you can listen to this program wherever you are or any other program we have on the air at that moment. Now, we were talking in the last hour, and we've been talking about it for some time anyway, and we began this hour about the dysfunctioning taking place in the Democrat Party. Chris Van Hollen, a Maryland senator, was on with Caitlin Collins, and he's trying to ask, do you even have any leadership in the Senate right now? Chuck Schumer is supposed to be the leader of the U.S. Senate, the minority party. Listen to the question and listen how Chris Van Hollen tries to dance around the question.
If fewer than 3 out of 10 Democratic voters have a favorable view of Chuck Schumer, do you think that he should lead your party in the Senate?
Well, he's got a very tough job. And so my view is we should get through the 2026 election,
right,
see what voters say,
yeah,
but also at the same time be prepared for the presidential election, because it would be really good, of course, to win the Senate and the House. But mm-hmm. ultimately, we need to make sure we have a Democrat in the White House.
Yeah, well, Van Hollen did not have the gonads to say, no, Schumer should not be leading us, and we're going in the wrong direction as Democrat socialists try to take us over. He's protecting his own political career. They're more determined to win. Of course, cheating is nothing new to many Democrats, but in this case, they're just willing to step aside and let the Democrat socialists rule. They don't dare speak out against them. I told you yesterday, in fact, I did a commentary the other day on the same thing, that Ken Martin, the DNC chair, they're not getting enough money in. They are $2 million in debt. You know why? Because a lot of the standard Democrat donors realize, is my money going to help the Democrat Party or the Democrat Socialist? Either way, the DNC put their headquarters up as collateral to get a bank loan to cover $2 million in debt, and they're basically telling vendors, don't send us any bills yet. Wait till after the election. We'll pay you then. Right, right. Well, I'm looking at a piece in Politico, which is a left-leaning, if not left-standing publication. The title of it begins in this article, It's Beyond Embarrassing. He's beyond embarrassing. They're talking about Ken Martin, the leader of the DNC. And donors are warning, yeah, we have a 2028 problem. Not just now, we have a 2028 problem. And again, it gets down to the money. One Democrat bundler, trying to bring all the cash in, said, nobody wants to give Martin or DNC money at this point. But worry is focused on the day after the midterms, because the DNC is more of a presidential player. Yet it's beyond embarrassing, and it's not going to get better until Martin is gone. But then another Democrat donor said, well, the DNC is floundering. I don't see anybody who wants to be really involved, especially over the next 2 years. Still another Democrat bundler. These are the guys that bring your cash together for you. Said, we're baffled how little time Martin has spent reaching out to donors. He's not making calls. He's not doing it. He is in a death spiral. And yet you've got so-called leaders in the Democrat Senate now. Yes, Senator Schiff, he is now a senator. And he was saying, well, we want to be in the tent with these guys, and I'm willing to stay in there with them. Are you an idiot?
We've got a new poll out here at CNN tonight, which finds about just over a third, actually, of Democrats now identify as Democratic Socialists. 59% of them, right? So 60% are younger than the age of 45. Are you on board with this? Do you see this as, you know, accept this, that this is where your party's going? And are you good with it?
Look, I think we're a big tent party.
Yeah.
I think we should be a big tent party. And I would rather be in that big tent in the majority than be a smaller party that is stuck forever in the minority.
In other words, I'm going to test which way the wind is blowing. They're not even being good Democrats. They're scaredy cats, not Democrats, scaredy cats. Well, Dr. Fauci's Senate hearing yesterday continues to echo and ripple, sending shockwaves. 111 times he took the Fifth Amendment, even though he has a presidential pardon questioned by Senator Rand Paul.
The very last question I asked him was very specific to his pardon. Given the years that you were pardoned for, during that period of time, did you destroy records? And he refused to answer that. And I think he is protected completely. All it takes is an honest answer. Even if he has destroyed records, which we believe he did, his assistant had an email that we put forward that said, hey, Dr. Fauci, congratulations. I deleted tons of your emails over the weekend. So we do believe he destroyed records. That's against the law. And I think that he could have answered that honestly, and he wouldn't have had any problem, no criminality because of his pardon. But in choosing not to answer it, I think it is obstruction of Congress, and I think there is a very real chance that he could be prosecuted for that.
Now, there's a big issue. And if Fauci thinks it's just going to go away, it is not. It is going to grow and grow and grow. And in fact, next week, Senator Rand Paul has already said, I'm going to introduce a resolution to make him come clean, or at least we make sure he does not hide behind the Fifth Amendment. Question raised to Senator Paul. On the repercussions. Question on the repercussions, and Senator Paul was saying, well, we're going to have to test that. And then he moved on and pointed out, Fauci knew early that this was not some way wet market. This was produced in one of the labs that he had helped fund. He had helped send money into this Chinese lab to weaponize a virus. Once again, dealing with Fauci and what he knew and when.
Privately, he found out in January of 2020 that the infection did not start in the wet market from wild animals. The original infection came from people not connected to the wet market. But for 5 years, including on most of the network shows, he has said repeatedly over and over, it came from the wet market. So he said the opposite in public to things he said in private. The virologists that he got together at the end of January in 2020, they all told him it looks like the virus has been manipulated. It has a special cleavage site called a furin cleavage site that doesn't occur in that family of viruses. There is suspicious aspects to this sequence for the virus. And yet publicly, they all circled wagons and a few weeks later produced a paper saying this is not a laboratory construct. Very, very certain language, not conjecture, not possible. They said it was not. About a month later, a group of scientists then said it was all conspiracy theory. I wasn't even involved in the debate. The first year, I was concerned about the virus and what we should do health-wise, but I really wasn't concerned with the origins. But the interesting thing is they circled the wagons, but all along they were still saying privately, oh, my goodness, I think this might have come from the lab. Well, they're publicly saying no way. Why? Because they all were involved with funding it. Primarily, Anthony Fauci approved the funding.
Dr. Fauci approved the funding. He was sending your federal tax dollars to China, an adversary, to carry out scientific research. Look, I have stated before, and if you've heard me say it, bear with me as I restate it for the new audience. We continue to get new listeners every day, and I thank you for helping promote that they listen. But I've stated before, I believe that we do need to have research on what we need to do in case a virus is weaponized against us in some fashion. We have to know what could happen, what we need to do. But you do not carry it out in a foreign adversary nation, especially communist China. And then on top of it, you start trying to hide behind it. Even Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman admitted in the beginning, we were all kind of confused, and he got misled by Dr. Fauci.
Dr. Fauci, I'm not here to perhaps attack you or defend or anything. It's really just more... honestly, I just want to acknowledge I have had members of my family die from COVID. And now I also grieve for people that I've met that have lost their business through the pandemic, and they'll never been the same. Now, as during the pandemic, I was the lieutenant governor, so we were in the middle of all of that maelstrom, trying to find the right balance between protect life and protect the economics and for all of it. And I'm not sure if we got it all right or wrong. But without a doubt, I can continue to question myself. But one that it's not about much more your regrets, but I have one.
Senator Fetterman admitting, I have a regret because I did not press harder to understand what was going on. He was lieutenant governor in Pennsylvania at the time. But the issue was, all the legacy media and everybody lined up behind Dr. Fauci, the man of science. And he had all these other scientists signing off on what he said. And in the beginning, we didn't know. And Trump had to rely upon him. And then gradually we began to realize he just wants to be controlling the nation and was probably, and in fact, as we know by his diaries, he was basically, oh, look at me. I'm so big and so powerful. Everybody wants to talk to me. In the meantime, Americans were suffering, dying, businesses shut down, people unemployed, leading to suicide, drug use, abuse, who knows? I mentioned earlier that thousands, maybe up to 50,000 Moroccan migrants start overrunning a Spanish town of Ceuta, a nearby enclave controlled by the Spanish government. Spain is now deploying its military to that North African enclave, trying to deal with this invasion. In another case, some of them were trying to use a boat to get to that particular area, and it began to sink. Untold numbers died in that effort. And why are they trying to flee Morocco? Well, the point being that they have an opportunity to get out, they're going to do it, and they decide, let's just all invade the Spanish enclave and take care of it. And what you have is thousands of military-age males running through the streets, flashing victory signs. President Trump has labeled it as an invasion, saying that will happen here if we let the Democrats back in control. And I agree, they will open up the borders again. Or we're never going to learn. Well, coming up, someone who can give us an insight on what the Democrat Party is doing or will try to do, and also the Missouri election, which is next Tuesday. Several issues in front of you, particularly issue 4 and 5. Senator Tim Jones of the Jones and Arps program will be joining us. That's still to come. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
Change, change, change. 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 Change, change, change.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Joining us now is former Missouri House Speaker Tim Jones, host of the Jones and Christopher Arps program that air every afternoon, right before Larry Connors USA. Speaker, glad to have you on board with us, sir. Hello, Mr. Speaker. Can you hear me now? Well, we had him on your phone. Let's see if we can get him back through there. Get him on the board and have it come through. Mr. Speaker, do you hear us? Apparently is not connecting. Well, I guess we'll have to move past that. I'm really sorry. I wanted to get his input on some of these amendments and the constitutional issues you'll be voting on next Tuesday. He has a deadline of 1:30 because he has to go on another program. I say 1:30 in about 10 minutes, so we can't continue to delay trying to work with him on that. But I know he would be pushing, when it comes to Amendment 4 and 5 on the Missouri ballot, yes, yes. You're hearing a lot of noise about why you should not be supporting them. But Speaker Tim Jones, Christopher Arps, and I do the same. Mike Ferguson's done the same. You're entitled, obviously, to make the vote you the way you want it. But 4 and 5 are not what the adversaries want you to believe it is. They will be the right thing to be done for Missouri. And in the meantime, we're also looking at, again, what's happening to the Democrat Party. I was pointing out to you earlier that even Politico admitted, in quoting some sources, that the party's a floundering, basically, and they're not getting the money coming in, and they're already $2 million in debt, and they're already trying to look ahead to 2028. The midterms are still coming up in this November. Now, we have to see how well they're going to hold up at that point. But keep in mind, the Democrat Socialists are now inside the Democrat Party tent. And as you heard in our previous hour, Maryland Senator Holland, Ben Holland, admitted that, well, we are going to be okay. And he would not condemn Chuck Schumer for trying to control these Democrat Socialists inside the party right now. And AOC, who might have been far, far left previously, is now looking more tame, like she's in a cage compared to the Democrat Socialists running around. And Adam Schiff, now a senator from California, says, well, we're a big party tent, and I'd rather be in that tent than be outside. These guys are trading what political capital they have and what beliefs they have simply to stay part of the party. You think the Democrat Socialists will let them stay? I wouldn't think so. They'll be targeting and primarying them soon. And we're Mondami, another Democrat Socialist. Remember, he endorsed two of the Democrat Socialists in races and they ended up winning. Well, in New York City, those who voted Mondami in are recognizing this already is not going very well. In fact, I'm looking at a piece out of New York. The Queensboro president is accusing the Democrat Socialist of America perpetuating, quote, white supremacy. So this is a rare instance of a well-known local Democrat taking direct withering aim at the group that propelled Mayor Mondami into City Hall. They point out the local elected officials have been hard-pressed to publicly blast Mondami and his hard-left base. This is all inside Politico. The mayor's approval ratings remain strong. The DSA has emerged, according to Politico, as a serious political force in the city. So some of these who are upset with Mondami and what he's doing, they're hinting at a potential turning point. But is the attack going to be big enough? The anti-Mondami sentiment engulfing the Bronx and the mayor of the Bronx area, the city council members, already accusing the mayor of just giving our community crumbs. Crumbs. He said, in our community, we're not trendy enough to justify the kind of improvements other communities are getting, because maybe they're not going to be socialist enough. The Democrat Party invited this into its ranks. They've been trying to get more and more progressive. They thought that was the way to go. That's the way everybody will want to go. And they go back to when AOC ran and got elected, and Ilhan Omar and Tlaib, all of them pushing progressive and in many cases anti-Semitic views, and in fact endorsing, encouraging Hamas and Palestinian terrorists. And they were not standing up against them. And if you don't stand there to stand there and stop them, to rail against them, push them back, they're going to run you over. They have already. Democrats all across the nation are not sure where their party's going to go next. I told you of a survey yesterday pointing out that it was a CNN survey stating that basically we do not have the power and authority in our, and belief, I should say, in our leadership. And if we don't have it in our leadership, then it doesn't make any difference. But the point being, there's no one strong enough to say we're not going to use them. We're going to stand by and let them take control of our party. Do we have Senator Speaker Tim Jones? We're just not going to be able to make it. Well, we're past time. He's got another event he's got to do, so we're going to have to blow it out. I'll try to have him on if it works out for him Monday in advance of the election. The election is Tuesday in Missouri. Many of you might have already voted in early voting. No excuse. Voting is now available. Used to be if you wanted to vote early, and I always did, only because I never knew my job was going to take me out of town, or suddenly that day I would not be free in time to go to the polls, or if I did, I'd have to wait and I couldn't stay. So you can vote for no reason whatsoever now in advance. That started earlier this month. But Election Day is Tuesday. I know that Tim Jones and Christopher Arps on their program earlier today covered it again as to how important this is, and they'll do it again on Monday. There are a lot of confusions about Amendments 4 and 5. They say vote yes. I say vote yes. But, of course, that's for you to make your own decision. So make sure you're listening to them Monday, because that'll be their last chance before the actual voting date of Tuesday to get their intake as to why they are pushing yes when you've got a lot of commercials out there running the other way. Listen, political parties and PAC groups and independent candidates, when they buy a spot, they can say what they want, and they have to acknowledge who's paying for it, who's standing behind it and supporting it. But if it's wrong, it's wrong. The problem on both of these issues, there's a lot of confusion. There's a saying in politics, if you're having to continuously explain why you're doing what you're doing and what you would do with this vote, you're already losing. So I'm not sure if 4 and 5 will pass. Same thing for some of the candidates that are up for election. Depending on where you live, you'll be voting on some candidates inside your district, your county. Make sure you go over the ballot in advance. You can go to Newstalk STL, our Facebook, Newstalk STL, or newstalkstl.com, and you can pull up a ballot and see what will be in front of you when you go into the polls. You want to go in informed. Just don't go in and flip a coin or go in and just start going down the row, checking yes, 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 or a candidate that you don't really know anything about or that might actually have been working in the past, if not today, and will in the future against you and your family. I know it's hard to stay on top of a lot of it. Politics dominates us, and yet we also get lost in the wash cycle. But inform yourself the best you can. So again, go to newstalkstl.com or newstalkstl Facebook, pull up the ballot, see what's on the ballot for you and your area, know which candidates you will or will not support, and have your mind made up before you go in. Same thing doing with the various propositions and amendments. An educated voter is what we want. You have that right. Exercise it. Exercise it responsibly. Coming up, we're going to deal with the deal that has been struck with Hamas to put down its arms. Will that really happen or not? Still to come. Stay with us.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Overnight, President Trump announcing U.S. negotiators have reached a deal with Hamas to lay down its weapons and relinquish its control over Gaza. U.S. officials who briefed reporters late last night say Hamas has agreed to disarm and transfer power in Gaza, as long as Israel withdraws from the Strip. The proposed move, part of a peace deal announced by President Trump and his newly formed Board of Peace, an international alliance the president has championed to oversee the administration's 20-point plan to end hostilities in Gaza.
It will be responsible for recruiting and training a new government that will be made up of Palestinians, along with highly qualified experts from all around the world.
But details of the plan are slim, and Hamas has not gone public in support of the plan. If the agreement does come to fruition, verifying that the militant group has laid down its arms will be a challenge, as well as convincing some Israeli officials to back the deal. One U.S. official says Trump would be very disappointed if Israel did not follow through on its commitments to support the plan. However, all these questions haven't stopped the president from declaring victory, posting online that the new technocratic government will work with a new Palestinian police force to take responsibility for Gaza.
So President Trump has a deal that Hamas is going to put down its arms. I, for one, do not believe they will. They might in part, and I'm sure Israel is not really believing they're going to, but Israel wants to be out of the Gaza Strip entirely, and they want to quit fighting in Lebanon. They, everywhere where they've gone in and had to deal with terrorists, once it's declared that their terrorists are not going to be there, they move on. They're not looking to occupy more territory, but they want to defend their territory and their people. Trump continues to offer an olive branch, trying to say, look, we can find a way out of this if you'll just abide by what you say you will. And when it comes to getting Hamas, the very group that carried out the attack in southern Israel, they say that they will surrender their tunnels. They'll give up all their arms. There may be some within that group that are, yeah, we're willing to put an end to it because it's, we can't win. We've already seen it. We've lost too many. It's not worth the fight. But there are the others, the fanatics that say, no, we will continue. We will say we will lay this down. We say we will surrender these arms, but they have no intention of doing so. But if it could be achieved at this rate, what does four-star retired General Jack King think?
This is a huge step forward. I mean, clearly, this goes back to October of 25 when President Trump brokered the deal, remember, to get the hostages out in exchange for prisoners, to go to a ceasefire, and also to get humanitarian relief in for the Palestinian people. And then they put together a framework going forward which would eventually get Hamas to disarm, give up political and military control, and Israel would pull out of the Gaza area. And but of course Hamas has been resisting all of that for months since that time. 9 months have passed, but the persistence of the Trump team here deserves a lot of credit, and also Egypt participating, Turkey and Qatar in this.
And to that extent about Hamas and dealing with the Iranian regime, Secretary of State Rubio said the Iranian regime, and that would include all of its terrorist proxies, has never had to deal with a president like President Donald Trump. Quoting him now on from an interview that he did with Fox that will air Saturday night, tomorrow night, Secretary of State Rubio said, I don't think the Iranian regime has ever faced a president like Donald Trump, which is someone that actually takes action. They got used to for 20, 30 years, not just the U.S., but the broader world, allowing them to get away with things like lying, breaking deals, tricking people into agreements, and so forth. Secretary of State Rubio nailed it. That's exactly what's been going on. And even those prior presidents that were saying, well, we have a deal, we think it'll hold up, well, They knew it probably wouldn't, but they're trying to put a best foot forward. You don't want to walk out of an agreement and say, yeah, they signed off, but we don't trust them. You're trying to allow them to prove themselves. But the moment they start attacking our troops or hitting other Gulf state regions, they're going to get fired back. And in fact, the Kuwaiti Defense Ministry announcing that they had to destroy multiple Iranian drones over Kuwait airspace, saying the Iranian attack did damage vital and military facilities. A lot of it caused from the fall of shrapnel. No human casualties, supposedly. But the Israeli defense says we're taking all necessary measures to protect the sovereignty of our homeland, its security and stability. That's what Israel has been wanting to do all these years. And the other Gulf states are now siding with the U.S. against Iran. That's why it's striking out against them. And with this latest deal, supposedly with Hamas, a question for General King.
So what have we got here? We actually have Hamas wanting to move in this direction. And why is that taking place? Well, one, Hamas had a tactical success on October 7, 23, for sure, but a strategic failure. Why is that? Their organization, two-thirds of the fighters are dead. All of the original leaders are dead. They are a shattered organization, not capable of conducting any consequential attack on Israel. And as such, their major benefactor since that time is at war with the United States and Israel. So they're not able to provide the kind of support and sustainment to Hamas that they're used to getting. Also, they have received support. People don't want to talk about it, from Qatar for years and Turkey as well. And they're not providing any support. They're cutting it off from them and other benefactors that are individual investors. See no future in the organization. So financially and materially, their support is drying up and they can't recover themselves.
And we continue to put a stranglehold on their oil exports and any money coming in. I told you the other day, there was a report from Reuters that China was sending in man pads, shoulder missiles, anti-aircraft missiles that could be fired, carried by one man. China has since denied that they are doing so. The truth is probably somewhere in between. But the bottom line is, the enemies of Israel surround it. And they might all coalesce now against Iran. But as we've said before, in that region of the world, your friend today could be your enemy tomorrow. Israel knows that firsthand. And General King says, if you're looking for stability in the Middle East, if you can have this Hamas deal hold together, there are certain keys to this success.
Implementation and verification. And I've looked at this process, and it looks like a pretty good process. There's a lot of verification in it, phased in terms of Hamas has to give up their tunnels, their weapons production, their weapons depots, their heavy weapons, rockets, mortars, eventually their assault weapons. All of that's phased. Israel would withdraw from where it is right now to the yellow line, which is still well within Gaza, for sure. It's a buffer zone that they've established on the border of Israel and Gaza itself. All of this will certainly take time, and we can't trust Hamas. We already know that. They lie and they cheat. That's why this verification process that's phased in is going to be critical. And eventually, Palestinian Committee would take over control. If this is it, things are working out, there'd be a Palestinian security force and an international stabilization force headed up by a two-star army general. So the process is moving forward. Many people thought it would never get moving forward because of Hamas's resistance. But this is progress. Credit the Trump team for staying with this.
But keep in mind, we've got a lot of Americans. While our troops are downrange in a war theater, we have a lot of Americans that are trying to distract the president, which is not going to happen, but they are also not serving the value and the well-being of our troops. Let me share this survey, an Associated Press survey, reporting that 33%, just 33% of U.S. adults surveyed support the war and think it's worth fighting. 64% of those adults surveyed do not believe this war is worth fighting. They don't understand the value of, one, the Strait of Hormuz must be open to everyone, and more importantly, we cannot have Iran have a nuclear weapon. Well, you Americans who think that this war is not worth fighting, you ask the Arab Gulf neighbors who have been hit now by Iran, not by nukes, but by drones and other rockets and missiles. You want to live in that region? Go ahead. I will guarantee you, you'll change your mind, your attitude. But the survey showing 64% of those questioned don't think the war is worth fighting. Now, I'm against a ground invasion, U.S. troops going in as a ground invasion. I've stated that repeatedly. No U.S. boots on the ground, unless it's a special ops mission in and out. But our fighters, our naval blockade, our naval firepower, drones, things of that nature, those are still options. If you're going to break this down on partisan basis, which I don't like doing, but it's a fact, 87% of Democrats say they're not thinking the war is worth fighting. 87% of Democrats surveyed. 68% who declare themselves as independent say it's not worth it. And then you've got 37% of Republicans saying we're not in favor of this war. It has impacted gasoline prices. Is that why they're not in favor of it? Wake up to the bigger picture. The bigger picture could be that bright flash on the horizon, which is a nuclear bomb sent via Iran. Trump is doing other things to make Americans' lives better. In fact, he's been using vets to fill the gaps in the number of truck drivers needed.
I did 20 years in the Army, decided to retire, transition into the civilian world, and chose the trucking industry as my preferred choice and stuck with Warner. And it's been a great journey, and some of those skills that I learned in the Army have transitioned very well.
I like my job to be able to talk out to veterans, go out to installations, to job fairs, to voice the job opportunities that we have, not only in Warner, but also in the trucking industry. So I like doing my job. I like this program. I hope it really makes a difference for veterans.
We need more truck drivers. And rather than giving a license to drive an 18-wheel rig down the highway next to you and your family, these are veterans who have been doing that at some time in their service. Give them the jobs. It helps them and their family, and it's a safer roadway for all of us. By the way, today at the cabinet meeting at Camp David, the president focused on what had happened in Minnesota recently. Are you aware of this? There was a cyber attack on 30 water plants. And the president said, I would blame it on Minnesota and the governor, the corrupt governor of Minnesota, as he said. They like to say, oh, is it Iran? Iran should be so lucky, Trump said. They've got bigger problems than worrying about Minnesota. A New York Times report claiming U.S. officials unnamed blame this cyber attack as the work of Iranian hackers. Trump places the blame on Governor Walz and other state leaders who have not done what they should to protect the state's water infrastructure. Point made. I want to share a letter with you. I got a longtime listener, Diane, and she writes and has no problem with me using her name to that extent. She writes to LarryConnersUSA@gmail.com. You can do the same. She has told me for years about the grandson she has. He is now 10 years old. She's been sharing stories all the way back to 4, when he was 4 years of age. She said, my family, we all went to D.C. Monday and said that her grandson had competed in Keeper's Wars. It's a soccer competition. And the family also wanted to use it as a history lesson. They took him to Arlington National Cemetery and discussed the tomb of the unknown soldier, what it was. And then her grandson was asked by veterans, "What are you doing here?" And he would tell them, "I'm here to honor the veterans." And they in turn would thank him. Thanks to that family teaching that young man, who's now 10, the value of our nation. Oh, and by the way, Diane signed off. Have a Jack Daniels, and have a great day. Thank you, Diane. I'm certainly going to do that. And I'm wishing all of you a great weekend. We'll be back Monday. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.